The brothers Gillespie, Sam and James, are a musical duo hailing from Northumberland in northeast England, bordering the Scottish Borders region. Their exquisite brand of folk music is inspired by this land and the rich folk tradition it's maintained over centuries. We'll listen to some of their songs in just a moment. I'm Andrew Singer, and it was my great good fortune to record a conversation with the brothers Gillespie remotely this week. I started by asking them where they are right now, starting with Sam.
I'm sitting at my desk in front of my window in Edinburgh.
And James?
I'm in a small mining town, the highest market town in England, in the hills of the North Pennines.
All right.
Getting towards the Scottish border in the north, yeah.
Terrific. Are you actually brothers?
Yeah, we are.
Always... Many people ask this question.
Always fortunate when it works out right. Which one's pink, you know? How long have you been writing and recording songs together?
That's a good question, isn't it? Because we started playing songs together before we started writing and recording them.
From childhood, or when did you start?
Probably in our teens, I guess. It was kind of part of a sort of culture, I guess, growing up, like our friendship culture, to sort of share music together. And we grew up in a village called Wall in Northumberland, really beautiful place, kind of rural place. And yeah, we'd sort of go up the hill sometimes of an evening with some of our friends and share songs, you know, and that was part of like a kind of growing up culture. So I guess we were kind of sharing that sort of thing together several years before, you know, we kind of had this idea that we might start taking it seriously as a musical duo together.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, going back to childhood, and then there was always that creative edge to what I think to the singing. It was like late childhood, you know, there was a kind of upsurge of the music along with, you know, kind of adolescence, and it suddenly took off the importance of music, and it felt like a real communion and almost like the most important and vital thing that was going on in life, with those moments of letting go into group harmonies at midnight on the hill kind of thing. It led us on, and we both kind of followed music in different directions after that, and then rediscovered the sort of soft tones of the folk tradition after going through a more rocky phase. And then it was natural to start singing together. It just sort of happened without us. I can't even remember us deciding to do it.
It's wonderful to realize that you grew up in a musical culture. For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with it, you're in the Borders region of the UK. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so this is, I suppose, kind of a historically contested region between England and Scotland. Today, we're from Northumberland, which is sort of the English side, but then on the Scottish side you have the Borders, the county of the Scottish Borders. Obviously, they're also distinct, but there's some sort of cultural affinities, you know, that kind of transcend the border. So it's, yeah, like a historically sort of contested region that has this culture that's kind of maybe somewhere in between, you know, what you maybe would think of as England or Scotland. And it was, I suppose, historically a region that was kind of lawless in a way because it fell between the jurisdiction of two crowns. So you had people kind of, in a sense, quite marginalised from their sort of respective national centres of power, and kind of living, you know, by sort of raising cattle and kind of also raiding cattle, and that kind of thing. And, you know, I think their life was sort of a difficult one, but they gave rise to this, you know, amazing tradition of music and balladry, you know, over the centuries. So you could say that's kind of, you know, more broadly where we're from is like the Borders, you know, even though we're from Northumberland. There's a sense of a kind of trans-border culture as well, to some extent.
And they reckon this border region in the medieval times, the areas of England and Scotland that comprised the border, were the most lawless parts of Europe at the time, just ruled completely by warlords and families and blood loyalty and feuds. And English and Scottish crowns would steal from them when they passed through, so their only way of surviving was to steal from other people. And going even further back, the Roman Wall runs through the borders as well. So it's kind of been almost arbitrarily divided, going back a long way.
Right, it was the Wall of Hadrian, wasn't it?
Yeah,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
yeah. That's right, yeah.
The Hadrian's Wall.
And that's sometimes misconceived to be a kind of dividing line between England and Scotland, but of course when it was built, you know, there was no such thing as England or Scotland. And, you know, quite a bit of England continues north of the Wall. But there is, you know, nonetheless, this kind of sense of it being a dividing line to this day. So actually where we grew up in the village of Wall, which obviously takes its name from this wall, you know, this is right on the frontier of the Roman Empire. So if you kind of go up the hill from our village and you look north, you're kind of looking from the very fringe of the empire kind of into what would have been Barbaricum, you know, like the lands beyond the empire, the wild, unconquered lands, as it were. So it's quite dramatic when you sort of think of it in those terms. You know?
And it sounds like it must be a very rich folk tradition. Were you influenced by the local environment as well as by more international or more English or Scottish folk music from other regions? How what fed into your style?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think like at that period that we were talking about a second ago, you know, of being kind of young teenagers, sort of sharing music together, you know, we weren't really in any kind of active or like direct sense playing, you know, the traditional music from this Borders region. Although we kind of, you know, we did hear it and somehow it you know, filtered in. But it wasn't, you know, what we were playing at the time or even kind of, even what most directly inspired us. I think, you know, we sort of discovered we kind of came to folk music in a sense by the sort of 60s and 70s folk revival.
Yeah, so I suppose in a sense it came to us sort of, you know, by a long route, you know, it was mm-hmm. Pentangle, you know, we would hear border ballads from, you know, Southern English band, you know, or a band comprised of people from all over Britain, not knowing that there were songs from our local area, some mm-hmm. of the border ballads, child ballads, or then music from the Incredible String Band, which was, you know, I think totally infused with some of that border spirit as well.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it kind of came to us, but we didn't know that's what it was.
But it's all there in the land, you know, in a way, like, even though we weren't maybe conscious of it at that time, you know, there's something happening in the land there that I think filters in some way. You know, you get some kind of transmission in a way those songs arise from that land. Then we sort of gradually kind of maybe got more actively familiar with the kind of tradition of our own region. And that's still an ongoing journey, you know, especially in terms of, like, for example, the sort of instrumental music. There's like a whole very rich and quite unique Northumbrian music tradition that it also shares historically with the Scottish Borders to some extent. And they're just wonderful tunes that have this kind of particular feeling. It's kind of a little bit different to what we normally think of as Celtic music and a bit different to what we normally think of as English music, maybe. A whole wealth of tunes that we're kind of inspired to sort of continue learning. But we did, you know, growing up, we did also hear that music. But yeah, now we're kind of rather inspired to sort of engage with it more actively ourselves.
We've got some great tunes of yours to listen to in this episode. The first tune I think we have queued up is Golden One, which is an original composition by you, as are all the songs we'll hear today. Can you tell us about this song?
Yeah, so in its own way, this song is sort of arising from the land also where we grew up, around Wall, in the hills and the forests and the valleys. And it's sort of a song, in a way, like a bit of a myth or a sort of archetypal song about this character who feels kind of not at liberty, sort of bound and existentially kind of hemmed in by the culture. And this character has a sort of healing and kind of liberating encounter with a figure called the Golden One in the course of the song. So it's a song of the sort of longing for freedom In a way, in a kind of indirect way, maybe there's a sort of political dimension to it as well.
I can think of that line, Sam. What is it? 16 years old and my heart is more than a chest can hold. Mm. It's like that sense of like a heart's knowledge or a heart's sense of expansiveness being mm-hmm. just way too much for this sort of person who's on the threshold of adulthood to deal with, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yet, through that kind of longing, having an experience of connection and healing almost that could carry you through the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. There's some sense of that in it.
I think there's a sort of longing for connection of various kinds in a lot of our songs, and I think it sort of somehow informs what we do, you know, like connection to a richer community and connection to each other and connection to the living earth.
So this is the Brothers Gillespie, Golden One.
Golden one. 16 years old, and my heart is more than the chest can hold. No, my master, you're not my master. I don't hate you, there's nothing you can say. No, my master, I'm running faster, and the skyline wider
than your eyes. We're back on Traffica Europe Radio. I'm Andrew Singer, and I'm talking with the brothers Gillespie, Sam and James Gillespie. We've just heard the song The Golden One, and it's so beautiful. It's one of my favorites from yours that I've heard so far. Do you want to talk a little bit about your songwriting method? I mean, that's an original tune. It's so beautiful. To what extent do you incorporate consciously various influences, and how do you go about writing a song like that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Sometimes for me, a song begins with a couple of little seeds or one little seed. And that might be a kind of a riff on the guitar that kind of seems to come together naturally with some kind of sense of what the song is about. You know, a little, maybe one or two lines that give it this kind of dream. And that's often how it's born, you know, with the guitar. So I remember the start of that song, you know, where the guitar kind of comes in and the dee 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 dee, that kind of emerged years actually before the song was really written, but it was kind of rolling around and just sort of doing its thing for a while, and then it kind of gradually turned into this song. But often for me, there's after that moment of some sort of a little initial flash or inspiration, then there's this kind of process of sculpting a bit, maybe where you sit down with a bit more kind of conscious effort to try and work out where the song is going. And I think I'm tending to find that when that kind of sculpting process works, you know, there's a kind of flow to it, and you're not being too... it's almost like you're sort of discovering the life of this song. So in a way, already there, you know, you're not kind of sitting down with your kind of agenda to write a song so much as a sort of kind of gently whittling away at this thing to find the song that's already there. That's maybe how I could describe it. And I know the feeling of kind of laboring too forcefully with too much kind of head, you know, to try and make a song come into reality. And maybe, you know, you need to do a bit of that, but sometimes I've had a nice feeling of kind of flow, where you're sort of intuitively kind of feeling into the song, and it almost like it kind of lines reveal themselves to you a little bit sometimes. But obviously that doesn't always happen like that. It's nice when it does, though. Does that make sense to you, James?
Yeah, I can relate to what you're saying, and I think I have my own way of getting into it in a way. For me, I'm aware that my thinking mind or conceptual mind it doesn't think in images, it doesn't speak in surprising formulation. So I somehow have to get beyond that. And for me, often what works is the act of speaking or singing. I can escape the censor or the sort of the border guards of my mind by singing or by speaking. And then surprise myself. I'll go down to the river perhaps and just start speaking. And at first it might be, you know, just gibberish or just trying to let go of any sense of it, having to make any coherent meaning. And then maybe a surprising image would jump out or something I could work with. And some songs for me have come, there's maybe a temporary lifting where I can just sing into a recorder, ideally, and then a sort of unsculpted song might sort of more or less land in that way, and then there's that sculpting process, which I've got a lot to learn about as well.
Yeah, I totally relate to that as well.
That's terrific. Do you share songwriting credits equally, and do you both write the lyrics for most of your songs together, or finish them off together?
Actually, we more like write a song kind of individually, and then we sort of work on it together. Although I think we like the idea of kind of coming up with things, you know, coming up with the actual words collaboratively to an extent as well. But yeah, usually it's like someone has the song and then they'll bring it and we'll add things. But when we're just playing around, you know, we come up with things all the time together, you know. So yeah, it would be an interesting horizon to kind of incorporate more songs that we've kind of actually written together. I must say that quite often we, like, say when we're on a walk or, like, on tour or something, quite often we'll make up, like, daft songs, you know, really sort of free-form kind of gibberish songs, but with a kind of, sometimes with a dash of some sort of hilarity or inspiration. So it's almost like we kind of collaborate on songwriting more in the vein of nonsense songs, you know, than serious songs, but that's probably just... because we haven't got round to it yet, you know, the collaboration on serious songs in a similar way. So I think that's a question of maybe spending some time in you know, some kind of relaxed kind of retreat sort of context, and just playing around with ideas and just spontaneously making music.
Makes me wonder, because you're emerging as a songwriting, as a performing duo from a quite a musical community and culture, as you describe it, but I'm wondering, in this time of pandemic, if more of that retreat aspect is coming to the fore, if you're doing less live performing and community feeling with your work and doing more studio stuff or different kind of work because of the pandemic.
I think it could. Yeah, it could. So far, I mean, it's been because we don't live together, and in fact, we've lived in different countries with different lockdown restrictions. In this first phase of the pandemic, it's been an obstacle to us meeting up. But I think in the long haul, over the next year or so, if we work with it creatively, we really could use it as an opportunity to drop deeper into the creative side of things. Mm-hmm. And like just recently, we went walking through the countryside, singing and drawing inspiration as we walked. And I can imagine combining that kind of experience then with some intensive creative work would be a brilliant thing to do. And yeah, a great opportunity afforded by not having to spend any time trying to organise gigs, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a direction we're sort of going in, to spend more time in that kind of space. And certainly for me, in a weird way, you know, I feel less kind of, a bit less diffused than I did before the lockdown kind of situation, before coronavirus. I feel like, in a way, I have more space to kind of focus now, which I guess quite a lot of people are experiencing if they're not sort of back in a full-time job kind of thing.
Let's listen to another tune from you, Wilderness and Wild. And can you set this up for us? What are we going to hear?
This is another song which goes back a little way now, and it's describing a kind of return to a human community. So I suppose it was singing maybe to a part of myself at a time in my life that had kind of turned away from, almost like a sense of trust that a human community or human belonging was possible. Kind of looking back at that time in my life, maybe my early 20s, I saw myself as... you know, almost like a creature half living in the wilderness, not literally, but in some way slightly feral. Maybe not feral in a particularly life-giving way, but in a longing for warmth and companionship kind of way. And it was through the experience of, you know, some incredibly kind, generous-hearted people, which I had the fortune to spend a lot of time with around fires and camping and in the English countryside for days and days and days over several years, had this sense of being drawn back or coaxed back into a human family beyond my blood family. And that's been a foundational experience, and I feel that it's almost a prerequisite for much that can come after that. So, yeah, so this song is, it's singing to a child to return from the wilderness and come back to the hearth, and also to this this young girl, young woman who loves you and who's looking at you across the fire. Not to miss out that she's looking at you across the fire, and she wants you to be there, and so does everyone else around the fire.
This is Wilderness and Wild by the Brothers Gillespie.
Your gold's surrounding me, your blood. been watching you from across the fire all night long. Come back, leave me longing to hold your sled.
Back talking with the brothers Gillespie, Sam and James. What are you guys working on now? How do you continue to evolve with this? And especially I'm kind of wondering, what's your relation these days to the folk tradition which you've inherited and which is still all around you?
Yeah, well, currently we've just started a Patreon page, and we're kind of trying to make that like a sort of structuring focus of what we do. So aiming to release a few things every month to our kind of little community of supporters, which has been really nice, you know, to have a platform to work with. And there's a few different angles that we're kind of approaching it from. One is a sort of desire to kind of learn and arrange and record for our supporters traditional songs and melodic music from the Borders region. So like Northumbrian music and, you know, music from the border ballad tradition. So we're kind of aiming to kind of do one of those a month and release it to our subscribers. And we just started experimenting with this idea of sort of going on a long walk, like a hike and camping trip through the borders, and sort of recording music as we go. So that's sort of one side of it. And it's sort of really inspiring, you know, to connect with this really rich tradition of Borders music, and to kind of learn the songs and kind of get close to them, especially in this context of, you know, walking through the land. For example, we did recently this walk, sort of circular walk from Traquair in the Borders, where our grandparents are buried. And we sang a couple of songs sort of from locations where the songs were from, or that were referenced in the songs, or had some sort of resonance with the songs. And it was really, you know, that was a really magical feeling, especially at that kind of slow pace of walking. You know, you kind of drop down into a quite sort of attentive relationship to the land, and you feel that you can kind of sing with the land in a really nice way sometimes. So I think that's something we'd like to do a lot more of.
For our listeners who want to find you on Patreon, what is your Patreon campaign?
It's the Brothers Gillespie. I think if you put that in Patreon, the Brothers Gillespie, I reckon you'd find it.
Okay, so patreon.com and search for Brothers Gillespie.
Yeah.
Terrific. Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of traditional side of what we're doing with the Patreon, but then we're also kind of continuing to release original songs and kind of record them ourselves. And I suppose, you know, at some point these might result in us kind of recording another album or so.
Yeah, well, there's maybe just a couple of things to say. Like, one is, you know, just how much we're missing the world of, you know, the kind of gigs and shows that we play, you know, house shows and shows and folk clubs. And, you know, there's this whole world of venues, you know, scattered through towns, and you get, or meet all these friendly people who put you up and you sleep on the sofa, or you get put up by a pub and you just meet people all over. And it's such a fluid way of moving through the country and getting to know the place. And with the lockdown, the pandemic, all of that has kind of been frozen. So it is great that we have this outlet that's allowing us, it's allowing us some focus to keep, you know, to feel like there's still something going on.
Yeah, and definitely.
Kind of tied into all that is how challenging actually things are in our, certainly in our country, probably in yours as well, Andrew, by what, from what I see, just yeah, the situation, and feeling an increasing calling to have some response to the almost the multiple overlapping crises of the time. What is the role of music in the future and in navigating the future?
Definitely and challenging. I'm a poet, mm-hmm. and as a poet, I really connect with what you were saying about the silence and the dropping down into another sphere, mm-hmm. another layer of being, mm-hmm. where you can be more coherent and more complete, which is a mm-hmm. paradoxical aspect of pandemic, because it is outwardly such a time of tragedy and upheaval and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And as a project for Traffic Ear Radio, when we were planning it, we thought we'd do everything in person. We'd record all of our interviews in person, and the pandemic has totally inverted what we had planned. We're doing everything remotely, and yet, again, paradoxically perhaps, because people are home and looking for content and everyone is now doing online stuff, we feel like it's something we can contribute as a service even more than we had planned as we progress through this time of pandemic, to keep cultures connected, mm-hmm. and learning about each other, and in lieu of live gigs and all of that.
Yeah, it is amazing, like how creative people have been, and in finding ways to connect, and in some ways how it's opened up kind of possibilities that people hadn't realized before. But it is, you know, it is just very, very hard times as well. You know, so many musician friends, just really, and not just musicians, but you know, people in all kinds of fields in the arts, you know, just. It's like the whole basis of their kind of livelihoods and their kind of working life has just suddenly been, you know, evaporated. And you know, our blinking chancellor in our country just apparently yesterday said in a statement that artists and musicians should consider retraining. And it's just like, well, you know, quite a difficult thing for a lot of people to hear, you know, when they've devoted their
lives.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I talk with publishers, and my best understanding is that the entire field of literary endeavor has contracted by about maybe 40% in this pandemic time, you know, because of lack of distribution, printing, bookshops, mm-hmm. venues, symposia, you know, I mean, the whole book tours, you know, the whole works. It's just closed
up.
Yeah, I don't recall them telling the bankers to retrain. I believe there was a bailout.
Exactly. Yeah, I missed that.
Big bailout.
I missed that news as well. Another project which you're working on has something to do with puppetry and folk theater. Is that right? Can you talk about that?
So this is a kind of nascent thing that's taking form at the moment, kind of coming into being. But it's grown out of a couple of collaborations we did with Durham University. So Durham's a city just to the south of Newcastle, in the northeast of England. All around sort of research they've been doing in kind of records of early English drama, with a particular focus on dragons. And there's this kind of quite rich tradition around dragon mythology and dragon events and dragon happenings in the northeast. Sort of, you know, from kind of early medieval times onwards. And so we took part in these events organized by a lady called Barbara Ravelhofer at Durham University, featuring some friends of ours who are amazing puppeteers who had created these beautiful dragon puppets. And part of our involvement in it was kind of telling a story and providing music in a sort of way that interacted with these puppets. And it's kind of grown from there to basically a funding application to kind of make this happen on a bigger scale and to put on some dragon pageants around the north that will feature like procession and street theatre and dancing, kind of ceilidh dance music, and giant dragon puppets. Yeah. So for this, we're sort of in the process of founding like a theatre company with our friend Andy, and we're really excited about it. I think it's kind of it's a sort of horizon that we've often longed to explore. You know, that kind of idea of working with storytelling and with words, as well as music. And yeah, Andy's puppets are so inspiring. You know, they kind of just bring out all kinds of magic in the process of interacting with them. So yeah, that's kind of, I suppose, you know, it all depends how the COVID situation kind of unfurls. But hopefully at some point we'll be able to kind of interact with people a bit in a live context again. And we'll be working with stories from this dragon tradition.
Yeah, and from other sort of folklore traditions from the north. So there's so many fairy stories and dragon stories and tales that are sort of embedded with particular places, and we just feel like it'd be a great thing to do to bring some of these to life and to tell them and apprentice ourselves more to this whole tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I suppose it's arisen out of this sort of dragon-related research, but I guess sort of looking forward, maybe it would be engaging more widely with sort of stories from the tradition, and as James mentioned, kind of stories of sort of the fairy lore and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and if you don't already know it, if you want to hear a funny, sort of quite comical Geordie song, as in from Newcastle, well, it's from the northeast, I guess it's not really from Newcastle, but the Lambton Worm is a northeastern song about the fearful Lambton Worm, which is a dragon song. You'd probably find that. It's one of the more famous Northumbrian or northeastern dragon songs.
Terrific. It's such a rare treat to talk with you guys. Your music is exquisite, and I certainly look forward to hearing what you are going to be coming up with in the coming period. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We're going to go out on the song The Banks of the Liffey, and if you want to say just a couple words about that.
Yeah, we sometimes kind of describe this song as expressing those kinds of sometimes rare moments where the world seems responsive to our imaginations, and we kind of break through those feelings of kind of close-mindedness, those feelings of inertia and depression, and we kind of have this sudden kind of heart opening to the world sort of feeling. So this song is expressing some of that, or that movement between those states. And it's also a kind of a song of love for friends, really. It's a kind of very much a celebrating friendship kind of song, celebrating the road. In a way, it's quite a hopeful song, and it has its seed in some memories of a trip to Dublin. So the River Liffey is the river that flows through Dublin, and I have these very halcyon memories of being in Dublin with my friend, and the spirit of that feeling kind of flows into the song. And it features some ideas inspired by Sufism as well, this sort of idea of world and dream are but one. And it says at one point, Aman, Aman, which is kind of often heard in like Sufi music. You could translate it as like, oh mercy, you know, just this feeling of like, oh my heart, you know, my heart feels so full, and it's kind of difficult to bear the sort of beauty of this journey. And I guess I would also maybe want to say that you're not trying to say this is a kind of easy feeling to get. I guess it's not like it's easy to realize this open-hearted state, you know. It's not like a trite thing, I hope. But sometimes, you know, your heart does open, and you know, you meet your comrades once again in a sort of an open-hearted sharing spirit. And that's kind of the feeling of this song. Now when I hear this song, it sounds a bit fast to me. I think these days we play it slower.
Thanks a lot, guys. This has been a Traffic Europe Radio conversation with Sam and James Gillespie, collectively the Brothers Gillespie, and we're going to go out with their song, The Banks of the Liffey.
reflections, longing and striving and hitting the blues. Mostly time passes in idle distractions. Then you wake up, and your heart is singing anew. You rise up so hungry, long for an answer. They force you to school and you learn from the start. You know there's a place where your soul is a-dancing, but in the wasteland, in the wasteland, well, it seems very far. Grown ones have fled, the fountain is silent, lonely and fearful, you try to be free. In a system so blithely boring and violent, you turn to your comrades. Come, sweet comrades, let us roll o'er the sea, and we'll fall asleep by the banks of the Liffey. We'll carry our glasses down from the bar. I could row anywhere, but won't you come with me? Well, evening is falling in violet and gold. Through sunlight and storm I will follow the breeze. My home's in my heart and I long to be old. Fair distant lands, fair distant lands, where they lie o'er the sea. And a glass I will raise to these fine lads and lasses, the beautiful visions brighten the way, to the music that stirs in the whispering glasses. Warm summer's night, warm summer's night, and the long golden day. And we'll fall asleep by the banks of the Liffey. We'll carry our glasses down from the bar. I could roam anywhere, but won't you come with me? Well, dream of it one. Well, and dream of it one. We'll drink to remember the world and the dream, world and the dream. I but one, and I have a lovely child of the ocean. Wherever I am, know she will be. We sail the seas, she is my blood's motion. Wherever I roam, wherever I roam, is my pool and my dream. And we'll fall asleep by the banks of the Liffey. We'll carry our glasses down from the bar. I can roam anywhere, lover, won't you come with me? Well, dream of bird one. Well, and dream of bird one. We'll fall asleep by the banks of the come with me, world, and dream of it one. World, and dream of it.